Hello, everyone. Welcome to Talking Logistics, where we have conversations with thought leaders and newsmakers in the supply chain logistics industry. It's my great pleasure to welcome today's program, Jackson Wood, who's Director of Industry Strategy, Global Trade Intelligence at Descartes. And today we're going to talk about import tariffs, a top-tier enforcement priority in the U.S. So global trade was shaken and stirred like never before, last year, especially with regards to tariffs. And if the first 3 weeks of 2026 are any indication, tariffs will certainly continue to play a big role and shape the role of global trade management, this year too, with the next big development being the upcoming Supreme Court ruling, which can happen any day now, really, on the legality of the Trump tariffs under the International Emergency Economic Powers Act. So we'll have to stay tuned for that. And I'm sure we'll maybe have Jackson back on the program when that unfolds. But of course, while all of this shakes out, importers have to stay compliant with current regulations and pay the tariffs due. And not surprising, importers for the past year have been looking for ways to avoid tariffs or minimize them. But as enforcement around tariff evasion and customs fraud has increased, staying informed and compliant with regulations is more important than ever. So to help us understand the current enforcement environment and how to avoid any missteps, it's great to welcome Jackson back on the program. So Jackson, welcome back.
Thanks very much, Adrian. Great to be here, and always lots of excitement here in the global trade world. So let's dig in.
Yeah, I'm sure that if you were hoping for a quiet and a slow ramp to things in 2026, on the global trade front, I think based on, like I said in my opening comments there, based on the last 3 weeks, I'm sure you're disappointed because it seems like it's shaping up to be another challenging, unpredictable, dynamic environment in global trade management.
I think we may have talked about this in one of our previous conversations, Adrian, but I think those of us who have been in and around the intricacies of global trade for long enough recognize that volatility and uncertainty is nothing new. I think what has certainly changed is the volume and the velocity of the change vectors, if I could use that term. And I think the other thing that has obviously changed very significantly is there's much broader awareness, both within organizations, but even at the public level. Those of us who've struggled in the past to explain to friends and loved ones what we actually do every day, we don't have that problem anymore. So bring on 2026, let's go.
That's right. Well, it's very reminiscent of how, COVID put supply chain management in general on the map and really brought it into the boardroom at a lot of companies. And I think if there's only one bright spot to this whole thing with tariffs is that it's really elevated the importance of global trade management to the C-level suite and just to everyday, the everyday public as well. So let's dive into this enforcement aspect of it. I mean, a lot of changes like we just talked about in the US trade landscape last year. But maybe, as a way to kick things off, I mean, what stands out in the most for you in terms of, increased enforcement around tariff evasion and customs fraud?
So a couple of maybe opening comments, and then we can talk about what's shifted dramatically from an enforcement perspective. So I've been in and around global trade compliance for the better part of 25 years, so most of my career. And early in my tenure, back in the mid-2000s, so much of the focus of not only organizations, but of enforcement actors was on the export control side. So much of what you would hear about big fines, big penalties had to do with the export of sensitive technologies, whether those were articles of a military or a defense characteristic. And subsequently, organizations put a lot of focus and a lot of investment into some internal tooling and controls around mitigating the risk of export violations. Import investigations and enforcement actions were always there, but they were typically not, unless it was a very sexy, for lack of a better word, type of product or something that would really capture media or public attention. We didn't hear a lot about what was happening on the import investigation side. The biggest thing that has changed, aside from all of the the activity from a tariff perspective is there's a lot more money involved than there used to be. And so as an example, last year between the beginning of the current administration and the end of the year, the United States Treasury Department collected over $200 billion worth of tariffs. That's a massive number, not only in terms of the revenue that it represents for the United States, but the importers who are paying those tariffs are obviously noticing it from a cash flow or a financial performance perspective. And so the stakes are much higher now, purely from a dollars and cents perspective, than they were even a year ago. And so with that backdrop, obviously now the government in the United States in particular is far more motivated to take a very critical eye, a very detail-oriented eye to anything that importers into the United States might be doing to mitigate the size of the checks that they have to write on the import duties and taxes perspective. So that to me is the biggest thing that has changed, is the stakes are just so much bigger now on both sides of the equation.
Yeah, that's a great point that you know, and when I mean, talk about the export side, it just reminded me back when, you know, when I started my career, I was working in semiconductors at Motorola. So of course, semiconductors being high tech, there was some potential dual use of the tech, some of the technologies we were doing on. So export controls, right, and staying compliant with export regulations was definitely top of mind. And this is going back to, you know, the 90s, right? 90s, early 2000s time frame. So it's kind of interesting, you know, to your point, you know, now, because particularly with the changes that have taken place with the new administration, and just the dollars and cents that we're talking about here, you know, it makes sense why the spotlight now more than ever has is, you know, kind of shifted a little bit more now on the import side of things. You know, one of the things, you know, in preparation for the conversation that I think it kind of I missed, and maybe some of our viewers might have missed, was, which obviously is a very significant development, was the formation of the Trade Fraud Task Force. So for those that may not be familiar with that, I mean, who's involved in this task force, and what is this task force designed to do?
So I think there's a couple of important points to emphasize for even those who maybe have in passing heard about this. And let's go a little bit back in history, even to just talk about on the export side. So if there was an export control violation or some other regulatory issue around exports, typically those types of investigations or those types of legal actions were initiated and managed in particular specialized agencies or departments of the United States government. So whether the U.S. Department of the Treasury, the U.S. Department of State, the U.S. Department of Commerce, these were very localized investigation and penalty actions. What's very different now, particularly in the with the backdrop of this task force, is that the United States Department of Justice is now very significantly involved. And the task force that you referenced is a partnership led by the DOJ, you know, frankly, one of the most, if not the most powerful agency of the United States government, partnering with the Department of Homeland Security and Customs and Border Protection to, and I'm quoting their exact words here, aggressively pursue enforcement actions against any parties who seek to evade tariffs and other duties, as well as smugglers who seek to import prohibited goods into the American economy. So this isn't about some sort of administrative oversight and holding importers accountable on, you know, dotting all their I's and crossing all their T's. This is a massive signal from the US administration that we take this incredibly seriously. And we are bringing to bear some of the most high leverage teams and assets that we have at our disposal to enforce this priority. And I think it's representative of the fact that we now have this fusion of, you know, you talked about Motorola and some of my experiences early in my career, where whether it was in the context of munitions or military items or these dual use products, that was primarily a national security concern. we didn't want these very sensitive or potentially dangerous technologies to land in the hands of our adversaries. What we have now is this fusion of national security concerns with economic security concerns. And so I think it's very fair to say that the significant shift is not only about, dollars and cents, it's also about we can no longer think about trade compliance purely from a, we got to make sure the bad actors don't get access to our products. It's actually our manufacturing know-how, the capacity in our supply chains are fundamental to the economic security of our countries. And so we will continue to see, in my view, we will continue to see this fusion of enforcement, even rulemaking, where it's going to take much more of a whole of government approach rather than just delegation to some of these specialized agencies, which is what typically happened in the past.
Yeah, I think, the quote you read there, the key word that the word that jumped out at me was aggressively pursue, right? So it's not just like, this is aggressively, so I think I think they were very intentional, with that word. And I think, like you said, the fact that the Department of Justice is kind of leading this effort or is a big part of this, that it, certainly changes the nature of this as well. And I think, again, further underscores what you just talked about in terms of kind of the broader scope, if you will, and justification for putting together this this task force. Maybe kind of help ground this a little bit with some specifics or some examples. I mean, what types of tactics or red flags is the the trade fraud task force most focused on when it comes to tariff evasion and customs fraud?
So I think just think talking about this at a high level, Adrian, it's really about our organization's intent, with intent, trying to circumvent some of the regulations or some of the rules that are in place to collect these duties and taxes in the form of the tariffs, right? And so what we know has happened, and speaking anecdotally, in both big and small companies, is that folks who are running trade compliance departments are being put under a tremendous amount of pressure to just find a way to make sure that we don't have to pay these duties. We're not going to tell you what, we're just compelling you, encouraging you to figure out a way to mitigate the impact of these tariffs and duties on our business. And so there are lots of different things that organizations might consider if they were directed to or encouraged to figure out a way to pay a little bit less duty. So, undervaluation of goods being imported, misclassification from an HTS perspective, misdeclaration of country of origin, transshipping. We know that transshipping is a huge area of concern for the administration, particularly vis-a-vis the relationship with China and other Southeast Asian countries, dodging anti-dumping or countervailing duties, setting up shell companies, et cetera. So it's not legitimate, like, hey, we made a mistake, right? That's a risk that always exists in a complex discipline like customs and trade compliance, but it's these very purposeful and intentional actions to obfuscate the true nature of what's being brought into the United States. And then, with some degree of awareness at the senior level inside these organizations, like, hey, this wasn't an honest mistake. This was a purposeful action to try to avoid paying these duties and taxes. So that's really where the task force is going to be asking some difficult questions and causing a lot of anxiety in organizations is, you did this on purpose, and there are going to be consequences for that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the two key words that you said a few times there is purposeful and intentional, right? So this isn't just like an honest mistake, something that was a data entry mistake or something like that. I mean, there's a, if you will, an evidence trail that there was conversations around this. There was some level of sophistication around some of the things that were being done to try to evade the tariffs or minimize them. And the reality is that there already are some examples out there of companies that have fallen victim to this. So can you share perhaps some examples that help illustrate how this crackdown is playing out in practice?
Sure. So there was and I'll talk about two examples. These are in the public domain. Folks can go in and learn more about them at their discretion. But so the first one is a jewelry company that had operations primarily in Indonesia, but had distribution within the United States. And they were recently investigated and penalized for, and this even goes back farther than, everything that started to happen in 2025, a multiple year scheme to evade paying more than 86 million. And again, so these are big dollar amounts that are at stake here. So companies are going to do everything that they can, both within the bounds of the law and perhaps outside of them, to avoid having to pay $86 million on over $1 billion worth of jewelry imports. So again, these are big numbers. So there is motivation there for perhaps some creative interpretations of the legal requirements, or perhaps even just saying, you know what, we're not going to do this. So 80, they were doing a lot of the things that I talked about, the undervaluating, misclassifying, misdeclaration of country of origin. So there's that one. A more recent one happened with a forklift company that was operating in Denver, and they were selling forklifts that had been made in China, but they were labeling them as made in America, undervaluing the cost of the equipment. They were generating fake commercial invoices, and they actually were looking at potential prison time in addition to a $250,000 fine. So I think the expectation that has been set across the market is these aren't going to be inconvenient engagements with this task force. These are going to be material disruptions to the business and potentially personal disruptions in the forms of criminal charges to individuals within those organizations who may have either directly or indirectly enabled these transgressions to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's I remember hearing about that, about the forklifts, and yeah, I mean, that's a great point. I mean, because the criminal aspect of this, being subjected to criminal charges, ought to put some fear
Yep.
in not only those in the front lines that are actually executing some of these evasive actions, but the senior leadership of the company as well, that might have been the ones that are been kind of setting directly or indirectly the edict, to do whatever it takes to to minimize these tariffs. So
I mean, let's call it what it is. It's fraud, right? And regulators don't look kindly on fraud.
Right. I mean, I think some of the actions that companies can take, obviously, are which what you've been seeing, right? It's trying to lobby Congress to or the president to kind of create exemptions for your type of product, right? So so that's kind of the low risk profile, right? Is to say, hey, you know what? Let's just carve out an exemption for us, or for our industry, right? So we certainly saw a lot of that in 2025. But again, some of the things that you just talked about here with these examples, obviously a fraud, as you said, and criminal in nature. We could probably go on for a long time here talking about all the potential missteps, but maybe as a way to wrap up, I mean, kind of in this heightened enforcement environment that we're now in, I mean, what should trade and logistics focused companies be paying closer attention to right now to stay compliant and respond quickly as tariff policy shifting and costs are kind of reshaped?
Yeah. So it's a really important question, because if you again to go back to our experiences in the late 90s, early 2000s, when export controls were really becoming far more prominent and far more important from a regulatory enforcement perspective. Typically, if an organization got into trouble for circumventing export controls, the most significant recommendation that would come from an auditor or a regulator, and in many instances, it would be, we'll mitigate the fine that we're going to give you if you put a proportionate investment into your organization to build better infrastructure and better controls around how you manage your export activities. The same rigor is now expected, frankly, demanded for everything that you do on the import side. And so typically where organizations would invest in things like tariff classification, tooling, or product catalog information management was just, we just have such a high volume, we can't manage this from an efficiency or an effectiveness perspective. So we'll automate it where we can to make sure that our teams don't lose their minds just because of the amount of work. What is really required now is far more control, traceability, visibility, the infrastructure to be able to model and share information across different parts of your organization, whether that's with finance, whether that's with sourcing, et cetera, so that you're creating a more integrated and coherent picture of your importing activities for the whole organization. Because it's much easier to manage the complexity when it's a whole of organization approach. It's not just dumping more on the trade team, where I heard so many conversations over the last year, Adrian, of someone trying to, you know, run a small but mighty trade compliance team inside of an organization, and they're getting calls from the CFO every day, calls from the CEO every day saying, what's this going to mean to us from a margin perspective? What's this going to mean to us from a profitability perspective? And so these investments in infrastructure and expansion of capabilities is not only important because in the event that something does go wrong, it's the first thing that investigators are going to look at is like, how seriously are you taking this? Are you putting your money where your mouth is in terms of recognizing the importance of this issue? But then also spread the love, get your colleagues more visibility to what's happening from an import perspective so that they can be part of the team that's solving for this and protecting the organization from risk. So it's about building those capabilities, making those investments from a not only a technology side, but also a skill set perspective, right? So many organizations, we don't have the right expertise in-house to be able to manage this. And as we said at the beginning of our conversation, these issues are not going away anytime soon. So we all just have to accept the reality that this is how things are going to be, and we have to transform our businesses accordingly.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, a lot of companies, I mean, you kind of, you know, mentioned this. I mean, a lot of companies rely on external partners, you know, to assist them, right? Whether it's freight forwarders or brokers or things of that nature. So, you know, communication, collaboration with all the parties that are involved in the import process is important. But ultimately, correct me if I'm wrong, ultimately, it's the importer of record. Yeah, the buck falls on them, right? So, you know, if one of your external parties is doing something that you have no visibility to and are doing things without your knowledge, ultimately you're responsible, you know, if it's discovered. Is that right?
That's right. The importer of record. There is no excuse to be able to point to a broker or forwarder saying they made, just as a perhaps a final point on that, the brokers and the forwarders have their own issues to worry about, right? In terms of how they're providing their services. So in as much as they're not accountable for what the importer of record does, they have their own house to keep in order, right? And they have their own set of challenges to manage with respect to this new volatility that we're all navigating. So that is even more of a reason for the importer of record to, we can't rely on these, they're great partners and they help us be effective, but they've got their own risks and compliance perspectives to consider. So we really have to internalize and own our role as the importer here.
Right. You can't outsource the responsibility, the ultimate responsibility. I mean, I think that always, is the bottom line here. Well, Jackson, I mean, Like I said at the beginning, this is going to be an area that's going to continue to, change, continue to be critically important. Certainly, things are going to change again, like I said, once the Supreme Court ruling comes down. Either way, no matter what happens, there's going to be ramifications to it. So I am sure that we will have more than ample opportunity to have you back on the program to kind of get a pulse on, whether it's 6 months from now, 9 months from now, to see how things have changed and evolved over that. But certainly you raised some great points today. And, I want to just thank you for your time.
It's a pleasure, Adrian. You're most welcome, and look forward to our next conversation.
Great. I want to thank those of you that joined us. If you're watching this program on demand, either at Talking Logistics or at the Descartes website, and you've got a question or comment for Jackson, you can post it there, and I'm sure he'll be more than happy to respond via that medium. Again, thank you for watching. Look forward to seeing you in a future episode of Talking Logistics. Have a great day.